Okay, I'll see you in a bit. Wait. Ah, hang on, hang on. Here, to me. Don't worry, audio boom fans, I'll get to you in a second. Here. To aye. Let's get rocking. Let's go. Good girl. So it's all one word you're listening to. And it's what time is it? I can't see the dogs put them. 7:30, Tuesday the 6th of January 2014. I'm just gonna go silent for a couple of minutes. You just listen. Probably to my heavy breather, but listen. I'll explain why in a sec. Whoa, 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 whoa. There's a car coming. Okay, walk on. Right, okay, so basically I'm wearing my binaural mics, which if you are listening with headphones or earphones or earbuds, something that kind of isolates the sound, then you would have detected that fact. But I was also walking through a housing estate and I didn't want to look as though I was talking to myself, even though these days plenty of people talk on their through their inline mics on their earphones or earbuds or whatever, don't they? So, but I just wanted to not talk. Oh, some people coming, hang on. Chilly down here. Wait. Wait. Walk on. Oh, it's a fellow and his pregnant wife who walked past there. She's waddling. I think I've seen her. Somebody's smoking. Must be one of them. So I think the first thing to say is that I still haven't uploaded any binaural recordings that I've made since Christmas Day. However, I don't know at which point I'm going to be uploading any, so as it stands, I haven't uploaded any. Right, wait. Wait, wait. Good girl. Good girl. You ready? Wait. Go. Good girl. So I really need to sort that out. I've just been too busy, stroke, more interested in kind of relaxing, you know, watching the telly. Last night I watched a couple of things actually. We'd recorded the English fella, the ex-soldier who's walked the length of the Nile River from its source to the Mediterranean. It was the first programme on Sunday just gone. And I'm fascinated with long distance walking. It's something that I'm quite desperate to do, actually. The only issue I have with long distance walking is affording the time. And when I say long distance, I'm talking, I suppose 100 miles is long, but I'd like to do, you know, a route that's probably a bit more than that. I think if you work on 100 miles in 6 or 7 days, well, actually depends on the terrain, doesn't it? To be honest, depends on the weather, depends what you're carrying also. So in the programme anyway, the lad seemed to be carrying two different rucksacks at different times, of course, and he was walking with an African guy. I can't remember what nationality the African guy was exactly. This way, Mol. But he also had a film crew with him, but the film crew would go, and it would just be the two of them at times for a few days at a time. And the programme's really good. I'm quite surprised that, you know, he's claiming he's an ex-soldier, and he's wearing a kind of a t-shirt with a unit emblem on it, parachute regiment, funnily enough. I'm just kind of, I quiz myself over his decision-making processes when he's encountered some situations. They were robbed on a road. It wasn't a violent thing. The robbers basically said, give us stuff or, you know, we will be violent. They didn't hand over any money, but they gave him items of kit, a belt with a pouch on it, a hat, maybe some other things, we don't know. That's what the camera showed. But the most shocking bit on it was something that you probably didn't think was going to happen. And so if you haven't watched the programme yet because you've recorded it, or you're going to watch it, turn off now because I'm going to spoil it. But basically they meet up with these two journalists, middle-aged journalists, an American fella and an English guy, and they walk for a few days together. The meetup was just by chance. They were at some place, some town, and they met them there. And they decide to walk on for a few days together, and I think it might be Tanzania they're walking through. I think it might be. Come on, Molly. Molly, come on. And basically they have to veer away from the Nile because there's some impassable marshland, swampland. So they have to come inland quite a way. And it's basically just there's four walkers plus two national park rangers. I think there's two. Yeah, two national park rangers who are basically armed and they're there for protection. And they, well, they're basically walking on this particular day, and the commentary is that it's extremely hot and humid. It's cloudy, but it's really hot. And at one point, I forget what the guy's name is, the English guy whose idea it is to walk the Nile, he basically said, oh, it's 48 degrees, And the American guy, I can't remember his name, might be Josh, can't remember his name, is flaking. And by that I mean that he's suffering with, you know, the temperature. Well, he's exhausted, he's flaking, you know. English slang. And so they make a couple of stops. Because they're all generally tired, they'd carried extra water, but what they'd had to do was they had to give it to the American guy because he's, you know, he's kind of suffering with the heat. And then they decide to stop because it becomes 48 degrees C, which is extremely bloody hot. I've been in temperatures like that, especially when it's humid. It can become unbearable. So they put a shade up. They create some shade. They go to some a copse of trees, but the trees are so wispy that they don't provide much shade. So they make a shade out of I don't know what it is. It looks about like 2 by 1.5 meters piece of cloth or something, or a tarp. It might be a tarp. And the camera kind of fades out to black. It fades back in, and the guy says, "Yeah, the American guy has just died an hour ago of heat exhaustion." Oh God. My wife and I sat in the settee, were just in absolute awe, in the sense that, not in a good way, in a negative way, that the fact that that could have happened, I was gobsmacked. Because all the other people seemed to be okay. You know, the American guy had drank all of the water that he could drink, but still he was suffering from heat exhaustion and died. And it is, you know, I've had training with heat illnesses and injuries, and with something like that, you get to a point and it's actually too late. Your body is already going into shutdown, even though you may be fairly compos mentis, but I say fairly compos, you may be compos mentis, but going downhill, it's too late. There's no coming back from it. Even hypo and hyperthermia, you know, both ends of the scale. And it was just bloody gobsmacking. I couldn't get over it, and I thought, bloody hell. They make brief comment on the fact that, you know, it is a hot, and it's a dangerous place because there is no chance to get medical assistance quickly. You know, they said that they had park rangers on call who were 2 hours away. So I think the other group of park rangers were kind of following them up. That's me reading between the lines. And I say that because the emergency helicopter was 4 hours away. So if they'd been walking for hours and hours and hours, and the other group of park rangers were only 2 hours behind them, it just seems to me that their backup was walking behind them. Probably for protection, because they do say it was the place where the park rangers were there because of the poachers. I can't remember what it's called, Walking the Nile or something like that. It's a good program. They obviously, because the thing is over 4,000 miles long, it's taken them a long time to record. So, you know, the commentary when he's kind of commenting over, right here to me, straight across. When he's talking over a map which describes where he is and where they're walking, you know, he'll say, "Oh, we walked another 120 miles, 150 miles, and we ended up at this place." And you know, you think, well, it takes a week to do that. They're not carrying, they call them porters, I suppose they, yeah, well, I've known them to be called porters in Nepal as well as Sherpas, of course, but they hire porters to carry their kit, their heavy kit at one point. That is way too, 30 mile an hour speed limit, he must be doing 60. Oh God, people will never learn. So if you're, if you can get access to it, it's Channel 4. I think it's called something like Walk in the Nile. It was on at 9 o'clock on Sunday, and it's obviously a series. Probably going to be a six-parter by the looks of it. So, if you have got access to it, I recommend watching it. So on the subject of walking, my brother-in-law and I walked on Friday just gone, on the 2nd of January. We did the Yorkshire Three Peaks Challenge, and I was going to do it anyway. Sarah was going to do it with me, but she became quite ill over Christmas. She had a cough. I don't know whether I mentioned it, but she had a cough for about 5 weeks. And then on Christmas Eve, she went to the doctor in Ripon. And because if I haven't uploaded any audio before this one, because I may go home and upload this one straight away, but I've got quite a bit of audio to upload. We were at my mother-in-law's for a fortnight over Christmas and New Year. Because my mother-in-law had an appointment anyway at her doctor on Christmas Eve, she got my wife an appointment. And so Sarah went up to the doctor, and the doctor said she had a viral infection in her lungs, nothing she could do for her. Sarah explained after that she was getting a pain in her side, I'm pointing to it now on myself, you can't see, on her right side, probably just below armpit forward a bit, you know. So with a little bit of digging, it might be because Sarah's been coughing so much she's broken a rib, because she can't drive the car, she can't steer, she can't turn a certain way. So she might have actually coughed so hard and so much, and with such ferocity, because she has at times, but also coughed for, you know, minutes and minutes and minutes at a time, tens of minutes at a time, that she might have broken a rib. So to cut a long story short, she couldn't come with us because she wasn't well enough, even though she did come up Skiddo. She and I walked up Skiddo in the Lake District, which was an amazing day. I've got a video to put up with regards to that as well. So my brother-in-law and I, on the 2nd, he had no kit, so we bought him some kit. You know, rucksack and hydration pack and some energy gels and food and waterproof trousers, and he bought himself some boots. And anyway, to cut a long story short, Michael, who is, he's not unfit, he used to play rugby up until a few weeks ago, played rugby for Thirsk Rugby Club. He basically broke his finger, he had surgery to put a steel pin in it, but his finger is rejecting the steel pin and slowly pushing it out. It looks quite gross, so he's going in for another operation to have the pin taken out. and he also does cycling. He recently, about 5-6 months ago, got into cycling, long distance cycling. When I say long distance, he's done 100 kilometer. Yeah, he's done 100 kilometer ride, but he generally goes out for 20+ kilometers. And so he's not unfit. But if you looked at him, you wouldn't think, oh well, you're not the walking looking type, you know. And certainly. As we stepped off, there was his appearance and bearing was such that you wouldn't have thought he was a walker. Anyway, we arrived at Horton and Ribblesdale quite a bit later than expected, or intended, really. So we stepped off from the Penygent Cafe, where we kind of checked in by signing a form with our signing. Filling in a form with our email addresses and names and what time we stepped off, and put it in the letterbox as instructed. And the aim was to get round the three tallest peaks in Yorkshire, Penygent, Wernside and Ingleborough, and back to the Penygent Cafe in under 12 hours. So my intention was to start in the dark. I really did want to start walking about well, half to stop to step off at the at 5:30 in the morning at the latest, because even then we'd still be finishing in the dark. As it happened, we stepped off at 8:30 in the morning, and as we walked away from the Penygain Cafe, I realised I left my cable for charging my phone in the car, so I had to walk a couple of hundred metres back to the car park to go and get the cable, and then so I added on, so we didn't really start for about 5 to 10 minutes after 8:30. So anyway, we set off and we got up Penygent quite quickly. It was a clear day all day. It had been raining a lot the day before. They closed a lot of roads in the Yorkshire Dales because of flooding, and we were quite lucky that because flooding had started across the roads when we drove there. We've been quite lucky to get there anyway, and I thought we would have a bit of a muddy day in essence, but we got up Penygent fairly quickly. Now I've been to Penygent before when I did Trail Trekker, and we kind of crossed over the side of it. We didn't go up it or along the top, so I knew where the footpath was, and I knew there'd be a bit of a climby bit. So we got to the top of the path, and the path intersected with crossroads, and we turned left to face the foot of the main hill section. We'd already climbed up quite a bit. The ground raised quite a lot, quite quickly. Not too steep, but you know, it was enough to kind of get us puffing, given that we'd only walked 500 meters before on the road and on footpath before we started ascending. So as we looked left, the wind was howling across from left to right, and so we kind of ducked behind the wall, which gave us much protection, and took a few photographs, got a bit of video on my GoPro, and set off. Now the footpath, fortunately, went to the right as we were looking at the kind of the front profile of the hill. The footpath went slightly right of centre of the axis of the hill, and so we kept out of the wind, and quite luckily so, because the bit that we were walking on was quite rocky indeed. So got to the top quite quickly. We got up there in less than an hour and a half, and to be honest, there was a bit of dawdling, so we probably could have cut 20 minutes off that with stopping after a mile to take kit off because we were getting warm, fasten laces a couple of times, so we could have taken 20 minutes off that easily. So we got up there in just less than half an hour, a couple of photographs, very windy on top, and headed down, and then quite a bit of a walk actually to Wernside, which crossed over not any real kind of inclines, no real inclines involved really, just undulating terrain across farmland that was at times a bit boggy, a bit marshy, did get a bit wet and dirty, could have done with wearing gaiters when we came off Penygent, but anyway, nonetheless, it was a nice walk. And we stopped probably about a mile before getting to the Ribblehead Viaduct. Listen to this. Helicopters. I can't see them yet. Hang on, there they go. Chinook. No, not... I can't see. I can only see the lights. Chinook or no, the front one looked like a Chinook, but my reckoning is they were both Merlin helicopters. Anyway, I digress. It is pitch black. So there was a fair walk between the two, which kind of tired us out. And Michael was suffering from a sore knee by this point. I didn't drag him up Wernside, but I think he was just getting comfortable because he's never done this before, this kind of thing before. He didn't know how to pace himself. But he was all right, you know, he had a sore knee. Nonetheless, we stopped about a mile before Ribblehead Viaduct and we had a sandwich. We stopped at Ribblehead Viaduct, or at least in the car park opposite. And I gave him some Brufen and paracetamol because he was kind of suffering. Could see the pain in his face because of his knee, one of his knees, left knee, I think. And then we continued. And after about 40 minutes, 45 minutes, it was quite clear that the painkillers and the ibuprofen had kicked in. And, he was away. Like a flipping rocket. Because we were kind of up, you know, against the clock, and it was clear, the weather was clear, but it was cloudy and the landscape looked boring. There was no interesting light whatsoever, which was a shame, really. We saw some interesting features, but there wasn't much, wasn't really that many features, to be honest. A couple of caves, couple of sinkholes. Beautiful waterfall, just as we on our way to Wernside, and so we got up Wernside. That was a bit of a trek. It was long. I think. Oh, bit of a boot camp over there. Let's go have a look. Oh, what time is it? Oh, it's 8 o'clock. Oh, we have to get our two top gears in. Right, come on, Mol. Cross, yeah. So we got to Wernside and it was flipping freezing up there. I'd left my new gloves in the car. I'd left my new gloves at home, my thicker gloves. My hands were numb. So going down Wernside took a long time and it wasn't very comfortable. We got to the bottom of Wernside and the sun had gone down. So we started trekking a short distance across to Ingleborough, not very far at all, just a couple of miles, and then the ascent up Ingleborough. I smell smoke again. Cigarette smoke. And it was pitch black. Now, we had a very nearly full moon, very nearly, just like 99% full. And we had the moonlight, which was lighting our way. I had a couple of torches, but to be honest, when we did use them on the top of Ingleborough, you just concentrated on where the light was shining, everything else went black. So anyway, that was fast forwarding. We ascended up Ingleborough to the base. And he says, where now? Because everything's pitch black. And I said, I was using ViewRanger at the time to map where we were, even though I did have a map. I said, straight ahead, Mike. He said, but it's vertical. Oh yes, the footpath up Ingleborough from Wernside is vertical for 200 metres and you climb up. It does level out enough to walk normally for a couple of switchbacks, but then you're climbing again, quite literally climbing up rock, and then a few more interesting climbs up onto the plateau of Ingleborough, which actually isn't flat. It goes uphill a bit, and when we got onto the plateau, it was about 10 minutes or 15 minutes of walking and climbing after climbing up that vertical bit. The wind, I had to use all my strength to walk against the wind to get to the summit, and we did a bit of tourism to the the trig point there, the windbreak, and a cairn, and a bit further on, right on the edge of Ingleborough Plateau, is the is a viewpoint. Couldn't see anything except for the lights and the villagers below. So we quickly turned around because the mist set in and made our descent from Ingleborough back down to Horton and Ribblesdale, which took ages. Well, it probably took, let's think, probably about an hour and a half. Now, the problems we faced were, it was pitch black, so we couldn't see where we were going. Well, I say we couldn't see where we were going, we could, but you had to kind of think. It took twice as long, basically, to walk along. As I mentioned before there, putting the torchlight out did no good whatsoever. So it was easier to walk with just the moonlight. It was very boggy, so we were crisscrossing over the footpath, which had become a river in places, and marshland, going around lots of marshland, and also a couple of fields of limestone crags. Quite unusual to see, actually. I've never experienced that before. Limestone crags, which it's like a barren landscape. It was bizarre. But the footpath would weave its way through these, and sometimes you couldn't go on the footpath because it was full of water or mud. And so, come on, back home. Here we are. And so we had to take extra care. But come on, come in, come in. Oh, yeah. So, come on. That smells nice. What's that smell? Oh, it smells nice. And so we, yeah, had to take extra special care. But you know, we were feeling fatigued, going downhill quite a lot on rocky surface because it smashed our knees so much. Nonetheless, we got back to the Penigent Cafe, and we'd done the challenge in 11 hours and 20 minutes. So I was quite happy that we'd managed to get in under the 12 hours. And you check back in and basically say, well, you fill in another form, which is sitting outside on the wall, with your name and email address, and what time you got back. Stick it through the letterbox. Now, obviously it's open to a bit of cheating, that, I suppose. But I'm safe in the fact that we'd recorded our routes on ViewRanger 11. Well, actually, I didn't actually stop ViewRanger for about a minute and a half after arriving, but Mike had stopped his, and so mine said 11 hours 21. His said 11 hours 19. So we're saying 11 hours 20 minutes. So, and that was that. It's meant to be 24 and a half miles, but I think we did. It's meant to be 26. If you look on the internet, all his websites says 24 and a half miles. But how far did we go? 42 kilometres, whatever that is. Can you just do a quick thing? Just do a Siri. Just go, how far is 42 kilometres in miles?
My web search turned this up.
Okay. Didn't. I'm going to convertunits.com. Oh, for God's sake. I don't want to convert miles to kilometres. I want to go the other way around. Oh, how hard is this, man? Convert 42 kilometres into miles. Convert 42 kilometres into miles.
Let me check that. 42 kilometers converts to about 26.1 miles.
Okay, I was right.
There you go. So it was a great day. The map I was sharing live at the time to shareyouradventure.com. I've actually got, I think I've got to still put the pictures on the map. I'll upload the pictures to Flickr and then the map will pick it up later on. So yeah, hiking. Great, great stuff. Great stuff. Anyway, I'm gonna have my tea. I'm gonna watch some Top Gear. 35 minutes that was. I actually had a few more things to talk about. One very quickly was I tried these 1,000 mile socks. Now, I've known about them for the past 20 years, or in fact longer, probably 25 years. Yeah, I think so. And so I bought a pair the other day in the sale in Go Outdoors, and these are the ones with they're double layered, and so they're guaranteed never to give you blisters and last for 1,000 miles at least. So I tried them, they're lovely. I'm gonna have another pair. 1,000 mile socks. Who? Yeah, I was very well, I had my thoughts about them, but I think they're quite good. Anyway, I'm gonna go for my tea. Big potato. Take care. Bye.
All one word. All one word. All out. One word. Out. One word. Out.